All right, everybody, welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money. It is Thanksgiving week. There's a lot to be thankful for in general, even though we've all been through the ups and downs of the market the last couple days. We had a spirited episode on Friday with Brian and Joe. It was getting, we came out of the gates hot to try to lead you all through the volatility, but we're back this week. We're going to try and give you an episode. We've had a ton of awesome podcasts come out. So if you haven't checked it, go back, listen to the Matt Hogan podcast that dropped on Tuesday. This is going out on Wednesday, and I'm going to give you guys a bonus episode over the weekend as well. So you have plenty of crypto content. But we're covering everything from reviewing the Fear and Greed Index. Brendan was not supposed to be here today, but he loves you guys so much. He's coming in with some technical analysis. We have some awesome stats around the short term holder capitulation. So what happened over the last 10 plus days has been just an absolute historical short term holder capitulation for Bitcoin. We have some interesting predictions we want to go over. We're going to revisit the October 10th crash with some new data around the MSCI. Brian's going to cover for us something that happened there. Scaramucci, we haven't heard from friend of the program Scaramucci for a while. He's got some comments on the October 10th, who got burned as well. Some interesting, really interesting BitMine statistics when it comes to institutions and who is buying the dip, and some more to end the show. Brian's got some fun meme coin stuff to go over with us. So guys, welcome to the show. Brian, thanks for coming back. And Brendan, thanks for hopping in and joining us. I know you didn't want to, you know, if you had the time, you would, and you're jumping in here, even though you weren't scheduled to. So thanks for joining us, Brendan.
Yeah, man. It's funny. We were talking before this. We're coming off of some really big, exciting podcasts that were stoked to be able to roll out to everyone. But TiVo's like, Brendan, I think we need some technical analysis. And then immediately my ears perk up. I get excited. Everyone knows me. I love the charts. So I said, screw it. I'm making time. I'm getting in here. We're going to talk about all this. And man, it's not every day I get to do one with both you and Brian. So now I'm feeling a little bit special.
Yeah, Brian, glad to have you here. That's a great point. We don't mix and match the Brian, Brendan, Joe too much often. So this is actually a very special holiday episode now that I think about it.
Yeah, that it is, man. That it is. Well, I mean, man, guys, where do we even start here, TiVo? You know, should we start with the charts? Should we take a look at CoinMarketCap?
Yeah, let's jump into CoinMarketCap first. Let's recap where we were. Brian always likes to start with this. He kind of it's his just view in the field. Just kind of, if you're a football guy, you know, you're not on the field. Brian's a press box type of guy. He's an offensive coordinator that's up top, and he's kind of reviewing what's going on CoinMarketCap. So, Brian, start us off. We had a spirited episode last week, but, you know, again, Fear and Greed Index was dipping below 10 across the board, no matter which one you were using. A little bit of a bounce here, but let's click on it. I think we're still in fear, if not extreme fear, man. Woof. Unbelievable. So, Brian, break us down what you're seeing after the weekend.
Yeah, what can I say, man? The light stays on, just like we were saying on Friday.
Oh, it is. It's on. All right, good, yeah. Good. The light stays on.
The lights did not go out on us, and it was kind of what we predicted. I think it was Friday when we did the rundown show. I was saying it did feel like very bottomy at that time to me, and that's it's a pretty obvious thing to say. I mean, the fear and greed meter was like 9 or 10, or it was extremely low, lower than it was even today. And, you know, we were all kind of searching for reasons why we've seen some, you know, seen the prices go down so quickly, especially when we were at all-time highs rather recently. But Bitcoin right around 87.5, you know, Solana 138, Ethereum hovering right around that $3,000 mark. This feels like where we should be, in my opinion. I'm glad we didn't go much lower. And I know Brendan's going to dive into TA and talk about why that's so important, but I do think we need some bigger catalysts to get us, you know, back up over 90, 92, back up over 100. We're going to talk through that a little bit, but you know, it's the bleeding stopped. It certainly feels like, and it felt so bottomy on Friday because people were asking me about shorting constantly. Everybody I knew, it was like the talk of the town, people. Right. And then I even said, even before we got on, every piece of FUD possible about Bitcoin was coming through either on the timeline or just some personal friends like asking me about ridiculous things about Bitcoin or just past FUD aspects. So it felt so bottomy. It's good to see us kind of around this 87, 88 range. But I'm sure Brendan will dive into some key metrics and numbers we really want to be at.
Yeah, that's a great point. I've said this on the program a lot when we were going to the upside. Something that I said, I referred it to my production days, right? And I talk to you guys in this language sometimes, right? When we do a show, there's the A block, there's the B block, and the C block, and then the filler on the back end of these shows. And on the way up, it was always interesting to monitor, like, when Bitcoin was the A block, and they're calling Michael Saylor to get him on, they're calling Tom Lee, they're calling Scaramucci, and every A block of each hour starts with Bitcoin. That's kind of when you know, you're probably closer to, if not a top, like some term of short-term correction, because that's when we start getting the text messages and aunts and uncles start calling us when it's all over the news. And last week, I meant to say this on Friday, but I didn't. Last week was the first time that I've noticed in a while that we were in the A block on the opposite end. Obviously, we're going to the downside, super volatile. You know, Bitcoin, the term crashed. Bitcoin crash, Ethereum crash. It was every hour on the hour started with crypto and Bitcoin. I thought that was really fascinating, and just kind of build on your point of like it really felt bottomy, you know, that every single finance show started with Bitcoin. And you know, matter what it was, you know, this is causing it, quantum computers causing it, Michael Saylor selling, Michael Saylor's gonna get margin called, like all those things start coming up again. It kind of feels like you're on the other, that you're close to the bottom and a turnaround maybe, then you know, the knife keeps falling.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at afani.com/crypto101. That's afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani.
If you could only get one altcoin right now, get this one. I'm talking about the coin we believe has the strongest upside potential in today's market. After analyzing hundreds of altcoins, guys, this is the opportunity that keeps me awake with excitement all night. So here's why. It's got the perfect combination of strong fundamentals, proven team, and a catalyst that could send it significantly higher in the coming months. Yet it's still flying under the radar of many retail investors, which means you've still got time to get positioned before the crowd catches on. Look, we believe this is the perfect time to get in on this specific coin. So to get the full breakdown, just go to www.cryptorevolution.com/coin right now. The window of opportunity will not stay open forever.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas, any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the TrueAge test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what TrueAge helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code Crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
But Brendan, any thoughts on CoinMarketCap or anything that you want to pull up before we jump into the charts?
No, I was just going to say, I think as a whole here, you're right, there's been a lot of talk and people speculating as to why we've come down as much as we have. And I really do think it's just been a mix of a bunch of different factors. I think that the big thing that people are paying attention to right now is looking at what's going to happen with the Federal Reserve and what's going to happen with interest rates and kind of their whole approach to the market. And I think people are continuing to be pretty focused on that area. And then I think alongside that, you also have that large liquidation event that we saw last month. And I think that that has been the biggest contributor to why we have seen the crypto market go down as much as it has. And it's been super overlooked. People have brushed it under the rug. But in comparison, you look at it and it's several times larger than Terra Luna, Alameda, you know, FTX, all of these things combined. I mean, even comparing it to COVID. And it's bigger than all these things, most of them stacked on top of each other. And people just didn't feel an immediate burn. So they kind of brush it off as if it couldn't have been something that's going to affect us this far down the road, when in reality, I think that it is. And people just have not realized the lingering effects or the ripple effects that that has had on the market. And the way that I like to describe it to everyone is that anyone who was essentially in a leveraged position on an altcoin at greater than 2x leverage was liquidated. Now, 2x leverage is not a lot, right? That's like almost the lowest you can go is 2x. But the issue was, because of these deleveraging systems and everything else, and how Binance was interpreting these, it caused a lot of these assets to fall by close to 50%, if not more than 50% in value, which means that anyone at 2x leverage or greater got liquidated if they kind of met those parameters, which were most altcoins, right? You know, even Bitcoin saw a pretty big drawdown on Binance. And so mass liquidations, people got stopped out. And these were all the people who were the most bullish. It was the people who were long, leveraged long, all these people. And they were the ones who were wiped out. And the thing about leverage, it's not like, oh, you know, you lost a certain percent. You can lose more than you put in, and you can lose everything that you put in. And I think that that was the issue with this liquidation event, is that the people who were betting that the crypto market was going to do well and the biggest bulls were the ones that were liquidated here, which hurts. So then all of a sudden, when prices do come down and people are being forced to liquidate and forced to sell off, the same people who would have had capital to buy them back can't, because they were liquidated in mass. And it kind of just led to a little bit of this lingering effect that I think has lasted more or longer than people expected. So
yeah, and that's a great summary. And I feel like the last of the volatility's happened recently, and we haven't had you on, so that's a perfect transition into the charts, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, let's take a quick look at this, and we'll see what Bitcoin is actually doing over here. Because again, I do find it really, really fascinating when we look at this. But I mean, Bitcoin coming down, I think even a little bit lower than I would have expected. I was expecting the mid 80s, and we came down to just above 80,000 flat, around 80,500, 80,600 was the bottom that we hit last Thursday on November 21st. And so when we zoom out here, this is where we're coming back into. You know, we're coming back into this prior consolidation zone. We fell right through the floor of this. And I think the last time that I was on here, we were kind of looking at this, break through this big floor, come up, reject all these areas and start coming back down. And this is like a bit of a warning sign, kind of seeing this inverse break, hook and go. And after this happened, I mean, it was just a straight move downwards here from this consolidation zone up in here to this one down in here. And we did it pretty aggressively. So I think now that we're coming down in here, there's a couple of things that I'm looking for. Number one, we're kind of seeing a V-shaped like recovery so far, which is what we want to see. More often than not, these kind of V-shaped recoveries tend to indicate a bottom. Not always, but again, you kind of want to see that happen. That's usually a good indication when you're getting one of these V-shaped recoveries in an overall uptrend. So I am seeing this and I'm liking that. I also like the fact that we're bouncing around this consolidation zone, but we're still above these lows that we had from the tariff lows around 74,000. So I like the fact that, again, we're pulling back in here, but we're not quite as low as we were last time. And I think so long as we form some sort of like higher low inside of here, that's really what I would want to see from Bitcoin. Furthermore, if you're looking at where we're at, I want to use three different measurements. Number one is going to be the daily RSI. And if we look at that, I mean, we're at the lowest level that the daily RSI has hit since August of 2023. And if we go to the weekly RSI, we're at the lowest level that we've seen the weekly RSI since the end of 2022, start of 2023. Now, remember those two dates, right? August of 2023 and the very end of 2022. When are those? Well, we're going to have to zoom out on this chart all the way back to the very bottom of the market cycle. The very end of 2022 was right here, and we'll zoom out even more, at the very bottom of the market before it pivoted. This is where it was. And August of 2023 is right here. And this is right after the first major pullback after the market had pivoted, and we saw what followed afterwards. So we're saying, hey, the daily RSI is at the lowest level that it's been since this point. The weekly RSI is at the lowest level that we've seen since this point right here. And I think when you look at it like that, it's like, man, maybe this isn't as horrible as people are maybe making it out to be. Now, granted, we did go deeper in some of these pullbacks. It's not to say that we can't go deeper, because we did see slightly deeper price action on the relative strength index, but not by much, right? Not by much during some of these time horizons. And then the final thing that I want to share here is just the fear and greed index being, oops, not the movie, but looking at the fear and greed index and what this has been, because this has been another one where the fear and greed index hit a 10. The last time that we hit a 10 was at the bottom of the tariff crash. And then when we went to or below a 10 after that was, the bottom of the market in late 2022. So when we go back and we say, okay, well, the weekly RSI is at the lowest point since the bottom of the market at the end of 2022. The fear and greed index hit a 10. The last time we were here was either at the bottom of the tariff crash or the bottom of the market cycle in 2022. The only other times that we've been here is like on the daily RSI, which is after that first major pullback in 2023, all of which have historically been close to being bottoming points. And I think the big takeaway here is that these aren't tools to say that the exact bottom and price are necessarily in, but what it does tend to mean more often than not is that the bottom is close in terms of price point, and that the bottom is also close in terms of time. And usually what this means is maybe we could go a little bit lower, which we have seen. Maybe that happens a couple of weeks or a month later or something like that. That's still something that's on the table as a possibility. But historically, you kind of look at this as being close to or near a bottom. And that's what it's represented in the past. And so when I'm looking at this, I think the only other thing that we need to really look at here is for a higher swing low on this relative strength index, otherwise known as the RSI. And when we use the relative strength index, we can get things called bullish divergence, which is when the RSI is forming higher lows, specifically in this oversold territory down here. And even with prices forming lower, if we can see that relative strength is growing and gaining strength, it's a really good thing to see. So that is like the number one thing that I'm watching out for is, hey, we hit this oversold territory. We came as low as a 2020 or we came as low as a 22, excuse me. Now what I want to see is for us to kind of, you know, rally up, come in, form a higher low, and then continue higher. And this will kind of create that that hopeful divergence or convergence, depending on what happens, of what could happen next. And I think once we get this this bullish sign and this higher low on that relative strength index, for me, that's getting about as close to confirmation as we can get. So we're not fully there, and I wouldn't come in here and say the absolute bottom is in, it's guaranteed. You know, we don't have that kind of data in front of us yet. But what I hope that this can do is show that there's all these different historical and different data points that we can look at to reference what these kind of levels and moves have meant in the past and show people like, hey, here's kind of where the odds are going. So we don't have full confirmation. I think the story looks good enough to be cautiously optimistic down here as a long-term opportunity, but we still do need some more data to kind of really push us over the edge. So again, listen, I like Bitcoin down here in the 80,000s. I think I like a lot of cryptos down here where we're at. I'm waiting for a little bit more confirmation, but I am doing a bit of dollar cost averaging on my end to make sure that I get some exposure down here, because I do think that this could easily be one of those long-term areas of value.
Yeah, and a great point of, you know, what type of investor are you? We Brendan and I just got off a podcast with Ryan Rasmussen from Bitwise, which we'll release in a couple weeks. Matt Hogan's, coworker, who Matt Hogan episode's out now, so make sure you go back and listen to that. And he was kind of saying like, hey, you know, Bitwise is a you know, long-term investor type looking firm. We like this for the long term at these levels. If you're a trader, we don't really subscribe to giving out, you know, information or research about being a trader. So you kind of have to do a deep dive if that's your style of where you might want to make your entry points here or there for that. But the consensus is from the people that we've been talking to is, you know, from a long-term perspective, you know, the thesis of Bitcoin hasn't been invalidated in any way. And then a sharp correction like this kind of makes you think, hey, is this levels that you want to step in for the long term? What about your thoughts, Brian?
Yeah, we've seen this before. You know, Bitcoin, crypto, we have volatility, we have our drawdowns, and I think that's just great TA by Brendan. Personally, I'm very bullish at the levels we're at, and I don't think it's by no means that I think that we can't go farther down. That's certainly a possibility, but the way I always look at the majors, like the Bitcoins, the Ethereums, the Solanas, and a few others, ones I really like, the cornerstone of my portfolio, it feels like it's on sale right now. And I like that. If it goes a little lower, I'm not going to be too concerned about it because I believe in it fundamentally. Fundamentally, nothing's broken. We say that all the time. So if it's just a few ups and downs here, that I'm comfortable with that. Now, I do have some short-term trades and meme coins and things that we talk about that I'm a little bit more hands-on whenever we see the market bleed out. But something like Bitcoin and a lot of these majors, a lot of the real cryptocurrencies out there driving real value and innovation, it feels like an opportunity.
And love that. Transitioning us right into some interesting stats that I saw. So first off here, we're looking at a chart that's showing us that this was the second largest short-term holder capitulation in Bitcoin history. The first was actually... back in Brendan, we were doing episodes around this together, the yen carry blow up trade. And I remember that so well because we had the same discussion back then. And I remember talking with you either on air or off air. But it was, I think we said it both, where it was like, we came up with this thought. I was like, okay, so we were basically breaking down and going over and educating our audience. What is the yen carry trade? How did it blow up and why is it affecting everything? And I remember specifically drilling down to the point. I was like, okay, so some people overseas got levered up trying to do some currency arbitrage to go buy levered assets, and they had to unwind their trade. That's what this is. Yes. So then why is my long-term thesis on Bitcoin invalidated, and why is it down 30%? It didn't add up, right? So it was an easy step in and buy the dip opportunity on that. And then you're kind of playing at that point, because I believe it was August of 24. So you were playing the election as well going into the fall. And then you can see here on the chart, if we blow this up a little bit, You know, even to this day, that was a good buy. I believe it was down, the blow up that nuked Bitcoin to 49K. So you could have been buying Bitcoin at 50K back then. And then we haven't seen a short-term capitulation like this since then till last week. So I thought that was really interesting. And then kind of leads us into this next chart over here, which is 5.8% of the total supply of Bitcoin was traded in one price band. So almost 6% of the supply was traded between 83 and 86K. You know, that's a story of conviction, right? So again, those short term, again, these next three charts all play together. So the biggest short term capitulation, it all happened within a $3,000 price band. And what is that doing? It's shaking out these short term tourists. Everybody that we've said on this show that's like, hey, you're going to come in at 100,000 and your buddies are texting you and your family's texting you, I'm going to come in and buy Bitcoin. Like, we've said this at different price levels. Like, it doesn't really come that easy. You don't get to come in and buy Bitcoin at 105,000 and it goes to 200,000. That's not really how any asset works, especially when it has the hype that this one does, in my opinion. So we have, again, short-term tourists getting shaken out, people that bought at 90, 100, 120 even. You know, they came and then they left. And then the final one is, I don't know if you guys have ever looked at the Sharpe ratio here, but according to the Sharpe ratio, it looks like we're in a kind of rare opportune zone. So I don't know if this is anything that you guys subscribe to. I personally don't have it on my close radar, just something that I saw kind of getting tweeted around a lot this last week. And so that's kind of what I do, right? I bring the stuff that I see online to the channel, to the people. So any thoughts on that kind of breakdown, guys? Brian, let's go to you first and Brendan second. Is clearly we saw a shakeout. Clearly the statistics are telling us that it was short-term holders, people that bought basically 90 to 100 and above got shaken out on the way down. And then all of our other indexes, you know, the fear and greed, altcoin season's at an all-time low, all that stuff is kind of showing us, like, is there an opportunity here? We've all kind of said that we do, but anything new that these charts kind of boggled your mind there, Brian? And any new thoughts?
Yeah, I just think it further endorses kind of the point. We're not exactly sure if this is the bottom, but there's a lot of points from a TA, from a fundamental point of view, just across what the chatter is on the timeline, that it did feel very bottomy in those low $82,000 range. It feels like this the short-term holder capitulation signals a buying opportunity for long-term investors. And it could be very likely that we get a near-term recovery. But there's also just as much likelihood that we get some short-term volatility. There's definitely uncertainty here. But it feels, I mean, if you're dollar cost averaging in, if you believe in Bitcoin, if you believe in blockchain and what we talk about every single week, every single day, it feels like an opportunity to me. And I'm going to disclose it. It's not financial advice. But I've certainly been nibbling bigger nibbles than I normally do when we're going down. I'm not very shaken out. I've seen these corrections in the past, and there's, again, nothing fundamentally that's scaring me off. But, you know, love to know what you guys both think.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I would say that I saw a statistic from Ryan Rasmussen. We just had him on the podcast. He's the head of research at Bitwise. But more than 35% of or what was it? Yeah, more than 35% of Bitcoin, 40% of Ethereum, and 75% Solana is currently being held at a loss, which is a crazy thing to think about because it really doesn't feel like we're in that kind of a situation, but we are. And that goes to show that there were a lot of people kind of trying to buy higher. But I think that we're at an area where the pain has been felt a lot. And I think the people who have been around in the previous cycles are saying, oh, well, we have to go further. We have to go deeper to capitulation. I mean, guys, 75% of Solana holders are holding at a loss right now. That's really, really big. That's well over 50%. So I think we have reached that capitulation, or we've reached these moments where we have actually fallen enough. You look at it off the highs, and even for Solana, this thing since, I mean, what was it? September dropped about 50%+. And if you look at it from the all-time high, which happened at the start of this year, it's down over almost 60%. And I think that it's even worse once you go away from these large caps, because Solana, Bitcoin, Ethereum are the large caps of the crypto space. I think as you go down the stream to even more smaller market caps, mid-market caps, I would imagine that that number of who's holding at a loss is probably greater than 75%. And so to the people saying that we have to go lower and that we have to go deeper and there needs to be more pain and that there needs to be all these other things, I don't think they fully understand where the majority of holders are. And I think that that's an important thing to look at and pay attention to. Because again, you have these people who are used to the super cycles of the past thinking that we need to go down. Unless Bitcoin drops 60%, it's not a real whatever. And unless altcoins drop by, 80% and this and that, when times have changed a little bit, and I think that a lot of these charts that you put on the screen and pointed out, TiVo, help paint that picture to people of showing like, hey, there's a real risk versus reward opportunity down here where you now get to be part of the 25% who is maybe not buying at a loss, whereas the vast majority have for not only Solana, but a lot of these altcoins. So I think the pain is there. I think the risk is also there, but because the risk is there, you also have reward. And that kind of cues us up for potentially, again, we haven't seen all of the kind of bottoming signs that we need, but I think it makes sense if we do bottom here. Like I would say it makes perfect sense and I wouldn't be upset about it.
Yeah, and a great point of all the stuff that you just said. I think specifically to Solana, like all these Solana ETFs have just seen 17 days of like straight inflows. So you, again, I know we've hammered that home, Brian, but just to Brendan's point of like all these statistics of people being underwater, but there's still vehicles being, put out on TradFi that are getting a lot of attention. And that kind of brings me, this wasn't on the sheet, but there's somebody saying this, the largest Bitcoin ETF is posting record outflows. And then Eric from Bloomberg saying, well, that's because it hasn't had outflows before. And this quote unquote record is 3% of assets under management. The real story, which again, kind of goes to the A block, right? Like what sells good business headline A blocks? It's crashing. The ETFs are outflowing. Everybody's selling. And it's like, well, you could spin zone this, 3% of outflows to say, well, 97% of investors are sticking around despite a 35%, fire in the building and the elevator's not working and the stairwell's blocked type of thing. So you got to parse through this data, right? Don't just want, the boys crying wolf, to freak everybody out, and it's on the A block. So I think that's part of what we do here is try to parse through the noise with everybody. And, if you're consistently coming back and listening during the times where the price action isn't as fun, you're in the right spot. So if you're listening to this episode, I couldn't agree more that you'd be in the right spot. Give us a like, bottom right, if you're here on YouTube, hit our logo, give us a subscribe, because we're going to keep, parsing through the information for everybody and doing the research. And this is where Brian's going to take over now, because something on the timeline, Brian, it was the MSCI, like who caused this crash on October 10th? And you kind of there's this piece that's been going around on X. Everybody's talking about it, that there was some type of market manipulation for some of these index funds. And again, we can have our own opinions for it, but let's share this one. I'm going to hand it off to you, tee us up with kind of the overview of this, and then we can kind of kick it around.
Yeah, I mean, well, so MSCI stands for Morgan Stanley Capital International. They're a major index fund provider, and they have like the MSCI US Index, and they're essentially where large institutional funds all in this, and they build portfolios. It's huge. And last month, in that day of those massive liquidations, and to kind of jump on Brendan's back of what he was saying, those liquidations were huge. They were scarring. It was a big ripple effect in the market. That was October the 10th. And then we also had like news with tariffs. We had lack of data and a government shutdown. We're all kind of like, what happened here? And on that date, which was really interesting and why people are kind of pointing the finger a little bit, is on October the 10th, Morgan Stanley Capital International, MSCI, it's such a mouthful, released a proposed rule change that would reclassify or exclude companies whose valuation is mainly tied to digital assets, Bitcoin, Ethereum. So they proposed this rule and it really wasn't picked up a lot, but with everything else that was going on, that caused more fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And then just recently, it was either the 19th or the 20th, This was like the bigger shockwave. While we're hearing about it a little bit more, and it really feels like people are pointing the finger. MSCI formally opened the public period with detailed language explaining how companies like MicroStrategy could be excluded and how that index eligibility will be determined moving forward. And there's going to be a decision date on January the 15th. But with that all being said, why is this bad? It's because trillions of dollars track the MSCI indexes. And if you're included, you are all always getting constant automatic buying from these index funds. But if you're removed, those companies, it's massive automatic selling. So it can really move a lot of markets. Again, we're not exactly sure what's happening here, but we're going to know more on January the 15th. But very long story short, it looks like they could take MicroStrategy and any digital asset funds out of this index, which could cause some selling. But it's more talk and fear and uncertainty and doubt. That's not like something crippling where it's going to, you know, Bitcoin should crash because of this. We may have a dip for a little while and we'll recover like we always do, because it's a lot bigger than this one index.
Yeah, Brendan, anything to add? I mean, just to go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people talk about this, and I've had people internally already reach out to me and within our communities. And my thought process with this is that I think to a degree it's being blown out of proportion for what we know so far, right? It's not finalized. It's not confirmed. Like, we are going to learn more about this, not even this month, not next month, next year, at the start of next year. And so this is all stuff that is somewhat speculative, somewhat far out, and not solidified. And I think the reason that it's gotten so much traction is because, number one, they are a player. They're large, but they're not the largest, right? It's not like S&P is coming out and saying, we're not going to allow crypto companies or dApps or any of that. I think the other half of this is that I have a hard time believing that it'll stick or even pass, because what they're doing is they're fighting against everyone of significance if they're trying to make this rule. What you have is you have a very pro-crypto administration, you have a very pro-crypto SEC, and you also have all of the large banks and asset managers that are very pro-crypto as well. So are they going to fight against the government, the SEC, BlackRock, Fidelity, JP Morgan, VanEck? Like, are they just going to wage a war on anyone and everyone that's inside of their circle? I think that they'd have a hard time in court, and I also think that they'd have a hard time from a business standpoint, because it seems like this is the direction that the large financial players and also the government wants to take us. You know, the two big bets have been AI and crypto from the US, and I feel like this is counterproductive to both of those. So I have a hard time seeing it if it does pass last, and I have a hard time worrying about it too much right now, because it just seems a little bit far-fetched and out there. So I'm really not losing sleep over this one. I know people have freaked out because the implications are, or the idea was that originally this is going to be directed towards DATs or treasuries. But when you read the fine print a little bit more, it could even technically be applied to anything that is more of a crypto-friendly company. So if you look at Coinbase, for example, well, all of a sudden they have so many, clearly, I mean, they have custody of so many people's money, and they have thus ownership of all of that crypto, right? Because they're the custodians for it all. So does that mean that they can get thrown into this because they have custody of all of everyone's, you know, assets who's a member of their exchange? So what about them? Because they're a S&P 500 company, right? They're publicly traded in the S&P 500. Like, would that make sense for them to go after, you know, S&P, you know, top 500 companies in the US? Like, that almost seems, again, kind of counterproductive to the mission as well. So we'll see. I do think part of this is, again, a little bit blown out of proportion because, like, crypto's falling, and any kind of fuel that can be thrown onto that fire is going to burn at this time. And that's, like, what people are eager to learn about in a downtrend time, because it kind of plays into people's emotions. So they're going to click on it. They're going to look at it. But, again, we'll see. We'll see when it comes around. But I'm not losing sleep over it.
Yeah, and again, it feels like something of the magnitude that we saw on October 6th. Again, the biggest liquidation in crypto history probably had, you know, there was more to it than just one thing. You know, this could have definitely played a part. Tom Lee came out with the glitch theory that something happened on the exchanges and somebody got burned. And that kind of transitions us into our first video. A friend of the program, Scaramucci, the Mooch, he's back. I haven't heard him in a while, which I think he's got a new book coming out. So we'll probably be seeing more of him on the media carousel here. But I always like to hear from, you know, we try to bring different people. Obviously, you know, Saylor and Tom Lee are kind of the top two that we hear from the most. But let's hear what Scaramucci had to say, kind of commenting on the glitch here and how Tom said he kind of knew who got blown up but didn't want to name names. Scaramucci doesn't want to name names either. But again, different perspective. Let's check in.
I'm sure you saw Tom Lee's interview with, I think it was NBC.
Where Brian Sullivan.
Yeah, he kind of got cornered into a position of trying to explain what was happening with these market makers around the idea of a glitch. Do you think he handled that right?
We were in the green room, Matt and I, and Matt said somebody got burned very badly October 10th and 11th. Mm. They're probably tied to TradeFi, so they haven't fully exploded, but they're in the process of dumping and liquidating inventory and trying to deleverage themselves. And this happened during the FTX debacle. It happened late in 2021 when it looked like we weren't going to get the crypto cash ETF after the futures ETF. And so I think he got a little tongue-tied, but he was trying to explain to people that there's an operational thing that's going on right now that's going to take a few weeks to get itself out of the marketplace. Now, he said 8 weeks. We're into week six. I would be interested to see what Matt says. I think we're getting to the end. I think the bottom off that 81 number, if this holds for the next week, I think 81 could be the interim bear market low, possibly.
I love how that's the new phrasing here is we've already been through a bear market. It's like the bear market's in the rearview mirror. We've already been through it. That's the new lingo I'm seeing all over the timeline. Open forum for that clip, boys. Anybody learn anything? Any thoughts around it? For 81 being the bear market low, or the who got blown out so badly, and when will we find out?
You know, I'm curious. They were name dropping some there. I mean, I think we know that the main culprit behind this has been Binance and the issues that they had that kind of led to this happening. And it was a group of people that saw the opportunity. Binance kind of came out, said that they were going to patch the way that they did it. Basically the way that they analyzed and interpreted price on their exchange. They said that they were going to be moving to more external oracles and yada, yada. People saw them say that, said, oh, okay, well, this means that there's an opportunity to capitalize on this. People went in, messed with it, caused the event. And yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but again, you know, the event's over with, right? And that's kind of those one-off things. And the thing that people don't necessarily understand here is that this is different in nature from what we saw the last time that there was a blow up. The last time that there was a blow up, you had the Terra Luna and you had the Terra Luna crash, right? One of the biggest projects in all of crypto going to zero, completely like going to being worthless. Then you had Alameda blowing up. Then you had FTX, which is kind of associated with them, one of the biggest exchanges in all of crypto, blowing up, going bankrupt, people losing just astronomical amounts of money. That's not necessarily what we're seeing here. None of those crypto projects went to zero based off of this. It was an internal pricing area from a centralized exchange. Binance survived. They're not gone. Obviously, they're doing just fine. The crypto projects are doing just fine. The only thing that hurts here is that were there a lot of liquidations? Yeah, there were more liquidations, but all of the big players involved, no one necessarily blew up. And at least not that we know as of yet, but everything that we can kind of see, all the big crypto projects, Bitcoin's fine, Ethereum's fine, Solana's fine. Yeah, they've gotten hit in terms of price and we've seen some selling pressure, but nothing that is a nuclear bomb. As if Binance were to have blown up or Coinbase blowing up or Solana blowing up. Nothing nearly as big as what we saw in 2022.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. It's not nearly as big as what we saw in 2022. And that's why personally, I do feel like this could be somewhat of an opportunity or a local bottom, just like they said in that clip. There's a lot of fundamental reasons why that it points to that. So, hey, I'm ready for a Santa's rally. You know, let's get through. Let's have some explaining to do to Grandma Thanksgiving about exactly. You know, I'll tell her about MSCI and as much as she wants to know. But we need that Santa's rally, and I do think it could certainly still happen.
Yeah, I gotta find that. I gotta find that meme. It's like the. Yeah, it's this. It's this one. It's like the guy coming out of the troll coming out of the attic, and it's like it's this guy coming out of the attic, and then the family is like, come tell us about your coins. There he is. There's our little investor. Come tell us about your coins. How are they? It's a tough one. It's a tough one if you're heading to the table. This tough timing for everybody. And then last year, Brendan and I, we covered it on the show last year, was Powell was not kind to us at the December Fed meeting, ruined the Santa Claus rally for us last year. So we'll have to see. Something we're going to cover here in the next couple of weeks. But we're going to put a bow on Brendan's got to run soon. So you're good, Brendan. You can sign off right now if you want to say some final words to the people.
No, hold strong, everyone. We're going to be back in full throttle after the holiday this week, and we'll have a lot more rundowns to come on my end, but the guys will wrap it up.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you, Brendan, and I'll circle back with you after the episode if I need you for any uploading or anything like that. But thanks for jumping on, and Brian and I will continue. So, Brian, I want to tie a bow on this kind of talk of this crash, and it was this prediction level of was on 100 for Raoul Paul. So he predicted this 35% decline. If I share this tab here, it's a 2-minute video, but maybe we won't listen to the whole 2 minutes, but it might be worth doing. This was 6 months ago. He gave this speech and just kind of nailed it to a T. I don't know if he as the man, we always say we don't have the crystal ball. This guy might have one. So let's tune in here and see what he had to say, and we'll break it down. And that'll tie a bow kind of on the volatility we've seen for now. And then we'll kind of switch gears to looking forward.
It's not a mystery. It is a repeat of the debt cycle. They are rolling the debts. They are doing the same thing. Each cycle is not to do with the halving cycle, nothing to do with any of that. It's all driven by liquidity cycle and funding of debts. Each phase, we get phase one of the banana zone, banana number one. The corrective zone, banana number two comes. Another correction, banana number three. So this is the banana zone. So that's what happened in 2020, 2021. Off we go. Sorry, that was 2017, which again looks very similar to this one. That was the last one. Here we are now. Can't be clearer to me. I've shown you the macro evidence, the technical evidence, the sentiment evidence. Everything here suggests to me that hold on to your hats. Don't fuck this up. Don't lose control of your tokens. Don't use leverage. Don't get your wallet hacked. Just sit with it. Be careful. Don't get FOMO. Do all of the right things, and we'll go up to the next phase of the corrections. That's going to be harder, because the next one that happens, we'll have a 35% drop, and you'll all say, is it over? You'll definitely be sure it's over, and everybody on Twitter will tell you it's over, and it won't be over. By our work, we suggest that because of the elongation of the business cycle, because rates were higher for longer, the forward-looking liquidity suggests that, again, probabilistically speaking, without any guarantees, this whole thing goes into Q1, maybe Q2 of 2026, which would align with Trump's, you know, trying to win the midterms as well. So everything's lined up for us. I think it started. So keep the faith, keep building stuff, and let's keep driving Siri forward with all of it. Just sit with it.
Just to pause this here on his chart. So basically what he's saying is, if you caught that, was we're here, and then we shot up to here, and we're in the second phase correction zone. And he said, once we get to here, this is going to be the hard part, because there's going to be a 35% correction to a T. That's where we were. We hit the 35% correction. Everything's going to be done, and Twitter's going to tell you it's over. Everybody's going to say it's over, and it's not over. So again, he's like 80% of the way there of this call. And I thought, again, it's like, you know, I see this stuff, I want to bring it to you, and I want to talk about it, because, like, man, so far, what a call. And just kind of the way he eloquently said it from our work of, like, the liquidity cycle is kind of like he has a method to his madness. It's elongating the business cycle, all the free money from COVID, kind of is elongating the business cycle. You know, the economy has a sweet tooth, right? We can't get rid of this inflation. But then again, it's almost time for a quantitative easing cycle to start beginning now with all these feds cutting rates. And then again, Trump getting into the election cycle of the midterms. And then also what's going to be our next topic is the Fed. He's, you know, I don't want to say the word pack the Fed, but he's going to be picking who he wants to be the next Fed president, which is on our sheet next. So, Brian, is this guy Nostradamus? What's going on? Any thoughts on the prediction?
I mean, love him or hate him, he pretty much nailed it from 6 months ago. So I'm, you know, I'm subscribing with what he's saying right now. I think this that makes a ton of sense. And hopefully it happens that way. And he called it out perfectly. It's like, there's going to be a lot of pain. This is going to be the difficult part. This is never meant to be easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Volatility is the name of the game. But it's understanding the fundamentals, understanding the macro, understanding the TA, kind of what you do every day here with the rundown, TiVo. It's so important to kind of just let everyone, you know, keep our heads level here. 35% drawdowns happen. But you know what happens after that 35% drawdown when you kind of stick through it? You fire up. And I do. I think that's the case. And this is amazing. I've seen this clip circulating X quite a bit. And it's hard to say that he's wrong because he's like spot on to like,
yeah.
It's hard to argue it.
It really is. And part of the liquidity cycle, I think, is the Fed. And I think that, and we're going to have our year-end episode, which I'm going to keep talking about it, is I think it's a polarizing topic, this, you know, the choosing the new Fed. And I think it's really going to set the tone for 26, in my opinion. We'll yet to see. Obviously, there's a lot of other factors, but I think it's huge. And I was watching this interview this morning, Scott Bessent, who, again, on this program, we kind of teed up that he's the guy that you want to listen to back when there was a lot of noise, especially on the tariffs. We called that perfectly on this program, and he's a huge mouthpiece for the White House. And so I was watching this live this morning of him saying, you know, well, I'll just listen about the new Fed president, when that could happen.
Andrew, I'm still got one interview left, so I don't think it would be prudent to give any hints. And you know, I think that there's a very, very good chance that the president will make an announcement before Christmas. But you know, it's his prerogative, whether it's the before the Christmas holidays, in the New Year's. But things are moving along very well.
So I'm watching that live this morning with a cup of coffee. I hear that and just my brain, Brian, goes, my brain just lights up. I'm like, wait, I saw this on Kalshi of some odds of when is Trump gonna announce the new Fed president? Or it was a legit yes or no. It was, will Trump announce the new Fed president in 2025 before year's end? And I'm like, I saw this action and it was like below 50%. And I was like, well, I got my mouthpiece from the White House telling me it could be before Christmas. I'll take 40%, you know, 60% upside any day after hearing that. So I jump on my app, I give it a little hammer, a little doink. And then I immediately text you and I go, Brian, I just got some insider info live on TV from Secretary Bessent. And I got in and it went from 40, it was like 42%. It jumped up to 61. So we'll keep an eye on that with our, what we said last week as well. We got some other, a lot of Scott Bessent action coming up in December here for your boy on the prediction markets. We're going to keep that. We're going to keep tabs on that for everybody. But I think that's,
you're on
huge.
It, man. You're on it like blue. You're on it like blue bonnet. You're all over these. You're watching this stuff live TV, and I appreciate that text. And the beautiful thing about prediction markets too is like you don't even have to wait for that to resolve. You could sell in to like.
I could sell into that right now. Yeah,
you can sell.
I think it's going to be a hold. I text you. I was like, I can't wait to watch this one go to zero. But
we're macro bulls, man. We're perma bulls. We hold through the fire.
Yeah. We're having some fun here. Not financial advice, pure gambling here. But again, yeah, you're playing the odds. I'm like, hey, if this guy's telling me, you know, there's a chance that it's going to be before Christmas, I'll take the upside on a 40%, you know, odds on a yes. So I'll take that.
Heck yeah.
And I was quick to it, and it shot up pretty quick after that. So that was, you know, good bet for now. We'll keep track of it for the people. But so I think that it all comes down. I think he's kind of sneaking that out the door. And again, I think there's all posturing, right? Whether the Fed, the governors, what side are you on? What do you want to do for this, you know, big rate cut going to the year's end? Basically, they're starting to, I think you're going to hear this talk over the next 3 weeks before the rate decision, because this is the administration trying to, again, they've tried to bully Powell left and right, but this is like, hey, if you don't do what we want to do right after you do your rate decision, we're immediately coming out and announcing your replacement, rolling the red carpet out, having a press conference in the Oval Office. So like, that's kind of their posturing, I feel like, for this rate cut. Is obviously Powell's going to do what, you know, I think he's done a fair enough job. You know, it's, again, it's a Monday morning quarterback type of job, sadly. But, you know, I don't have any ill will towards that guy for his efforts. But when it comes to him versus the administration, if he doesn't do what the administration wants, I think immediately they're rolling the red carpet out for the new decision and doing press conferences and all that. And then maybe if he does what they want and gives them a cut, then maybe they wait a little bit more. I don't know. But that's kind of how I'm playing it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that thought. You know, if he doesn't give a cut in
a press conference, I think it's a press conference that week. It's like, yeah, it's new Fed announcement. Like, literally, I think if he doesn't cut rates, I think there will be a tweet storm of a press conference for the new announcement.
It's looking pretty clear that we're going to get a rate cut. At least good old Pauly Market, it was up over like 80% this morning. So it's looking pretty clear, because it was down. It was down quite a bit. And that's another reason why the price, when we were crashing, you know, our Fed rate cut odds were under 50%, under 40%, I think, at one point. Now it's back up over 80. So there's a lot of posturing going on. A
lot of posturing. So we're approaching the hour, but, you know, we're going to go a little long because it's the holiday week and we're only putting out one rundown this week. So we'll go a little long. I think that the BitMine story needs a little bump here. BitMine adds to the dip continuously. Last week when ETH was falling like a rock, Tom Lee and BitMine jump in and buy more. They approximately have now 3% of the circulating supply, on their way to 5%. They call it 5% alchemy, I believe. Just an absolute bully button when it comes to buying ETH on the dip here. And here's the point. This is why I bring this up. It's something new. We've talked about BitMine buying ETH nonstop, but here's what I thought was really interesting. When it comes to BitMine, for BitMine stock, the ownership has completely flipped. It went from, in just 13 days, I think this is fascinating, in just 13 days, institutional ownership of BitMine has skyrocketed from 6% to 31.69%. Whoa, right?
Whoa, that, I didn't even see that on the sheet. That's crazy.
It's insane. I think that's telling. It's institutions wanted exposure to ETH. They were waiting for this dip. We've pulled up the BitMine chart before. Completely parabolic. We even talked about it on the show when I was like, oh man, we missed this one. And then it came back down and I talked about buying it kind of in the 30s. I was like, all right, I think I got a good buy here. And then obviously we've kind of been pinballing with some high volatility, but very, very interesting for institutional ownership to go from 6 to 31, basically 32% there. That's something that we're going to keep an eye on. But again, it shows you the interest of institutions in basically what Tom Lee says, which is Ethereum right now. The Doge ETFs go live. Solid day. I think that's fun. You know, the meme coin, the OG meme coin, gets an ETF. Kind of how Eric says here from Bloomberg, the farther away from Bitcoin you get, the less assets there will be. Again, not a huge day for the Doge ETF. I don't think, especially in this climate, we would expect anything more. But very interesting to kind of keep track of. Brian, you're our meme coin guy. Any thoughts? Is it just kind of a historic fun day? What are your thoughts around it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's the ETF I would be, you know, deploying all my capital into. I love myself some meme coins, and I see paths for a lot of these to succeed. I think the clearest picture here right now is we've had, 20 days of consecutive inflows with Solana ETFs right now, counting just yesterday. We have Doge ETF. We have a Ripple ETF. We obviously know what's going on with Bitcoin and Ethereum ETFs. So there is an appetite for additional ETFs, and we'll probably continue to see a few more unique ETFs out there. But, you know, the main players are Bitcoin and Ethereum. But I won't be surprised. Like, we'll probably start seeing, like, multi-asset ETFs with, you know, a variety of these holdings. But, yeah, it's crazy to think this Doge dog that's just inflationary beyond belief. And his meme coin is meme coin, and I think has an actual ETF. So it is pretty historic, but you know, that I'm not rolling the 401k or the IRA into it anytime soon.
No, good point. And I kind of thought this, this is the second part. So there's more ETFs on the way. Then we'll get to this thing that I found really interesting about these ETFs. More spot crypto ETFs on the way. Dogecoin is looking to flip the Grayscale Dogecoin Trust. I just think that's a funny thing. The Dogecoin Trust is going to flip into an ETF. The XRP Trust, same thing. XRP, Doge, Chainlink coming. The Chainlink Trust is going to flip. So again, stuff that we've been talking about in the program. I think it's good when it goes live at all. I think we all know the way the climate is. You're not going to expect any blowout inflows. If there are, that's going to be fascinating. Kind of like the Solana one being positive nonstop. But something to keep an eye on when the market turns to see, you know, which one of these start to lead the way with inflows could be kind of telling where institutional money might want to gather around. Here is something that I found really funny and fascinating, and something that we've kind of warned about when to be careful. So there's something going on in South Korea around these leveraged ETFs. So we talk about, you know, the 2x Ether ETF or the 3x Nvidia, and we talk about how on the show we don't deep dive into the alchemy around how these ETFs are made up, but you have to be super careful because while there is a lot of leverage to the upside if it works out your way, the way these things work with options and covered calls and all this stuff, they can reset in a downturn, and it can really wipe you out. And so you need to be careful. And South Korea retail is so obsessed with these United States leveraged ETFs that they now have regulations. You must go to a DMV style training to get certified just to buy them, which honestly, I don't hate. Like, I really don't hate that, because we kind of saw with October 10th, like a lot of people go and use leverage and get completely wiped out. And then they kind of, a lot of them probably know it's risky and then they cry wolf later, but some people might not know how leverage works and how margin completely works. So I like this, you know, starting December 15th in South Korea, if you want to trade these leverage ETFs, you have to take a 1-hour online course and pass a 3-hour mock trading program.
I want to take it.
I kind of want to take it.
For fun, it would just be, I mean, it'd probably be stuff we already know, but it would be a lot of fun to take.
Kind of want to take it. I mean, again, the mock trading, you can learn. I don't hate this idea at all.
The South Korea loves the U.S. leverage ETFs. They had to regulate them. It's like a blackjack table.
Well, the Koreans famously love to gamble. We all love to gamble. Who are we kidding? I was just talking about Scott Bessent, announcing the Fed president.
That's not a gamble.
Have action on, what was it? I have action on Scott Bessent saying stablecoin in a speech coming up in a couple weeks. So I love the action.
That also feels very strong. I'm not classifying those as gambles.
All right, let's go. Let's finish off with some fun stuff. We got Monad, which was a Coinbase drop, I believe, right? And then You got the last one. Absolute hilarious. You're going to want to stick around for the last topic of the day.
Well, you're going to have to share your screen on the last one.
Yeah, but, I will. Let's start with Monad.
But Monad's a pretty anticipated layer one. This isn't even in the meme coin sector. This is just all across crypto. We've been hearing about Monad forever. They were the first ICO to release on Coinbase's platform. I think it was 5 days. I bought some. Joe did it as a cusp call and gave a great thesis behind it and why it was important. He really nailed it. And it had an initial sell-off, like all ICOs, you know, people sell immediately. And then after they rinsed all the ICO sellers, it fired up today, up 46%, past what the ICO price is. So something to keep an eye on. I don't know if I'm a buyer or seller. I did subscribe to the Coinbase ICO, and I got allocated, and I didn't sell it. Because there was like a stipulation, and I don't know if it's true or not, like early sellers might be restricted from other ICOs. So I kind of just put a couple bucks in there to try it out. But, you know, I'm like, this token's running now. And it's like true fashion. Get rid of the ICO buyers and now it's starting to run. And then I was like, why is this really running? Like, what else is going on? And then across all my Telegram channels, these super savvy traders, guys that I respect so much, are like, you got to check out bro.fun. Play the demo here. And it is with the Monad token built on Monad. Now just pick a cup, TiVo. There's a death cup in. You got past it. You're up and just go for it. Just try to avoid the death cup. And it escalates quick. I got up to like on the demo, I cut up to like a 500X or something. I was so many rounds in. I was like, my goodness. And you could play this for fun or you could literally wager Monad. And, you know, we're out here always innovating, always having fun. Even though, you know, when times are tough, and you just want to, you don't really want to step away from the screen. Maybe you want to step away from the charts, though. You fire up bro.fun. So shout out to one of the most simple games ever, but blockchain-based, degenerate-backed. And, you know, they kind of captivated my heart there for about 45 minutes last night.
So you can play with real, you can gamble? Is that the thing?
Yeah. You can, you're just doing the demo. Then when you sign in, you could just like gamble Monad tokens. And, you know, and that's the multiplier. You're at a 2.21X. You could cash out or do you think you have it in you? And then you get to see the cups beforehand. So you got like a 1 in 5 shot. You definitely have to shoot this one. Oh. And I hate it. I hated that cup too. I almost told you to get off of it.
It gets you when it clinks around. That's awesome. Yeah, so check out bro.fun.
Not an endorsement for any reason. Definitely be careful with that site. I have no idea who's backing it and who does it, but Monad out here doing some fun things.
That's hilarious. Well, we got some comments here. If some event was running a poll on next Fed chair today, I got you. Oh, somebody was just running a poll. Yeah, we don't know who it is. We had some awesome people in the chats. Hello from London. We got Grant from Tampa. We got James. We got Noah Blue. We got Zen. We got Deborah. Deborah couldn't make it, but she came to the live to tell us she couldn't make it and then said happy Thanksgiving. She's going to watch it back later. We really appreciate you guys tuning in with us today. It was a fun one. Brian, thank you for making the time as always. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. Happy Thanksgiving to the Crypto 101 family. Again, if you guys are interested and enjoyed the show, please give it a like, subscribe, and then check the show notes below if you want to get more information on how to join our community. My name's TiVo. I really appreciate everybody listening. Super thankful for all the listeners that have helped us grow this show over the years that I've been here. I am personally super thankful of the producer to see how this show has grown. I really, really, truly appreciate it. I know Brian does, Brendan does, Bryce does, Joe does. Our whole entire team thanks you so much. I hope you really enjoy the time with your family. Make sure you go back and listen to the Matt Hogan episode. Make sure you listen to the episode that we're going to drop this weekend. And we're going to see you guys next week to recap what went on while we were gone. All right, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving and enjoy your time with your family. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.
Cozy traditions feel good, and that includes your fall makeup look. From lashes for days to enhancing a smoky eye with your favorite shade of Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is your go-to for completing every fall look. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/cozy for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/cozy.